Hello and welcome. Radio. Hello and welcome to the Indie Business Podcast, where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Today's show is sponsored by Essential Wholesale, the world's supplier of the most amazing natural and naturally derived and organic cosmetics bases in the world. Grow your business with Essential Wholesale. Learn more at www.essentialwholesale.com. Well, recently the media reported that for the first time in history, or at least recorded history, the number of working women has outnumbered the number of working men. And by working, I think we have to say that that is, you know, considering traditional jobs and not necessarily all the other forms of working that, of course, we all know exist in families. But I thought that was such a fascinating topic. And when I heard about another study recently that was released, I really wanted to delve into it and share some information with you, my listeners, to help you kind of put this information and this sort of new work and family world that we're in into a little bit of a perspective. And so to that end, I'm excited to welcome our guest today. She is Dr. Mary Beth Mattingly. And Dr. Mattingly is the Director of Research on Vulnerable Families, the Carsey Institute, and Research Assistant Professor of Sociology at the University of New Hampshire. And she is joining us today to talk about a new study which she co-authored, and it's entitled Changes in Wives' Employment When Husbands Stop Working, a Recession Prosperity Comparison. Welcome, Dr. Mattingly.
Thank you.
Dr. Mattingly, can you tell us a little bit about how this study came about? Why was this an interesting topic, and why was it important for you and your colleagues to study and report on it?
Well, I think, you know, in the context of what's been dubbed this Great Recession, we knew that from the media, from the different data sources, that the majority of job losses were accruing to men. But we were really curious what impact this was having on women and families. And specifically, we were interested in how roles might be changing. So if a father or a husband suddenly wasn't working, what was the mother or woman doing? If she wasn't working before, was she working now? If she was already working, did she increase her hours? Sort of what sort of changes were happening as a result of this broad economic shift?
And what did you do to prepare for the study? How did you determine, like, what questions to ask and exactly who to pose the questions to?
Okay, our analysis relied on current population survey data. That's data that's collected by the Census Bureau. So it's really rich data in that about 50,000 households are interviewed annually, and you get a great sample, a great variety across the nation, but we had no control over the questions. So we were analyzing data that have been collected for years, and the same questions are asked year after year. And because of the survey design, we were able to look at respondents at two different points in time. We sort of came up with a research question and harnessed existing data and analyzed existing data to answer that question.
And the two points in time, if I understand it correctly, Dr. Mattingly, were generally, I guess, 2009 or so when we started dealing with the Great Recession, and back in several decades ago when we were, or Americans were in the Great Depression. Are those the two time frames that were analyzed?
No, nope, I think we looked at 07, 08 for, or maybe it was 08, 09 for the recession, but we also looked at 2004, 2005 to compare to a relatively recent period of prosperity. So we wanted to look, when husbands lose their job in the context of this recession, is wives' response different than in the context of prosperity?
Okay, so and so that's 2004, 2005 compared to 2008, 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so when I was thinking about the Great Depression, I know the report talks about just generally speaking, I guess, why we call it the Great Recession. It kind of harkens back to what we called the Great Depression.
Exactly. And that was not our term. That was a term that we cited and borrowed from other people, because this recession is so much deeper, so much longer, and widespread, cutting across the, you know, employment and housing and investments, that it's been, you know, different than a lot of recent recessions in many ways, and has had bigger impacts for families.
So what are some of those, you know, significant distinctions between the 2004-2005 time frame and the 2008-2009 one? What did you find? How are wives behaving differently?
The biggest difference is when we look at wives who were not working at the first time point, when we looked a year later, among those whose husbands stopped working during that year, both wives during the recession and during prosperity were seeking work. They were looking for a job. But in the recession, they were more likely to take a job. They were more likely to move to employment. And that's really interesting because you might think, well, during a recession, the market's tighter, it's going to be harder to get a job. And we're not really sure what to make of it. One thing we're thinking is, though, in prosperity, people were less worried. They probably knew that their husbands had some unemployment, maybe they had some savings, and they expected their husbands to go back to work more quickly. In the recession, I think people are much more afraid, and with due reason, that their husbands aren't going to get right back to work. The jobs aren't there. People are unemployed longer. So there's this greater need, this more pressing urgency to get a job so that people may be taking a job that during prosperity they may have held out a little bit longer for a more ideal position. And that's our hypothesis. We need to think about that some more and see if there's good data to test that.
Now, what about women who were already working at the time in both of these time frames? Were there any differences there?
The women, not really. Women, if you were already working, and we limited this to women working part-time, thinking that those were the women who, if they worked more hours, are most likely to increase their salary. So among the wives who are working part-time, in both cases, they were more likely to increase their hours if their husband stopped working. But we didn't see a big difference between the recession and prosperity. Maybe slightly more during the recession, but it wasn't a significant difference.
Now, does this behavior tell us anything about families and how we behave in this country today?
Well, it shows us how some families are coping. And I think the big question that it leaves for me is, what happens next? As the economy recovers and as husbands go back to work, are these wives who entered work or who increased their attachment to work going to stop and go back to pre-recession levels? Or are they going to have a taste for work and want to continue? Or are they going to continue because the recession has been a scary thing and they want that extra income and that extra security? And what's going to happen at home? Are gender roles going to shift even more? Sort of thinking about what are the long-term implications for how men and women behave at home and in the market will be interesting to see.
And that is also very fascinating. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we're just thinking about how this affects people's lifestyle choices. And I'm wondering if maybe more women will be less likely to think of themselves as stay-at-home moms for some portion of their parenthood than they would otherwise be.
Right, and that's the big question. I mean, we've seen over time increases in women's and mothers' labor force participation, and whether or not this will accelerate that trend or whatnot remains to be seen, but it is an interesting question.
Dr. Mattingly, do you know of any studies or even just you in conversations with people as you present your findings as a researcher and a professor, do you find people asking particular questions or when they talk with you, are they concerned about certain things, about what this means for the American family, about what this means for even just the psyche of men and women as they participate in relationships together?
Well, the big question that I get across the board is, what's happening at home? Are the men who are not working right now, are they doing more childcare and more housework? Are those type of, what's happening in those negotiations? And there's research not based on the recession, but research that suggests that when men are not employed, they don't do the housework. They want to preserve their masculinity, which is already threatened by not working. And that's not my research. That's Brines and some other folks. But then it's also likely, you know, in the context of a recession, when their wife has to work, they can't afford to hire childcare. They can't afford to have someone else clean the house. Are they doing it? And that's the big question that people are asking. And the data that we analyze don't allow us to get at that, but it is something we're very interested in.
And so you're saying a lot of people are asking these questions. Do you know of anybody that's actually doing some studies to analyze this and talk to people? I mean, and I'll tell you that, you know, I'm very active on Facebook and Twitter, and I can tell you that we're talking about it. And you probably know that.
But people are definitely talking about it in their own lives and in their friends and families' lives. And academics are talking about it as we need to think about this, we need to understand this. Whether or not anyone has found data or collected data and is starting to analyze it, I am not sure. I'd be surprised if no one was, but I don't know of a specific study.
Yeah, I would too, although maybe I'm wondering if you get your take on this. It seems like it's in some respect way long overdue, because people have been getting laid off in pretty big numbers for, you know, as you just analyzed data from over 2 years ago, just about. So that's where the beginning was, 2008. So I'm wondering if maybe it's because it's not a neat issue. It's kind of messy to ask these kinds of questions. And not only that, and I'm not a researcher, I wonder what your take on this is. It seems to me that it might be different from month to month or week to week. It depends on health issues. It depends on maybe how many children there are. It's just so many variables, it seems.
Right, and we're used to messy studies. A lot of the work that we do is messy.
Okay.
I think the big thing is, you're saying it's not that recent, but if someone's going to go out and do a new data collection to get the funding and the approval, you know, research is a process, and what may seem to the outside world is a very slow process, but to gather that data is a huge undertaking. So the fact that the Census Bureau releases data so quickly is a function of them doing the same type of thing month after month after month. When you want to start a new survey studying something new, there's a lot of hoops to jump through and approvals to get and so on and so forth. So in the world of research, which it is pretty new, and also to go, you know, 2008 would be the very early point, but you'd want to be able to look through more current than that, certainly through 2009. So if you just looked at 2008, you wouldn't really capture what was going on.
And Dr. Mattingly, how is your research being used now? How is it being used to assess the situation? Is it being used to maybe improve it, or are policymakers looking at this data and doing anything with it?
I work at the Carsey Institute, where we do a combination. This particular article we're talking about today is academic research, but we also put out a number of policy briefs that do get circulated on the Hill and do get considered and to the right committees as they're thinking about work-family policies or help for low-income individuals or extending unemployment benefits and so forth. So it's a mix, and certainly we're seeing our work heavily read, heavily cited. We're getting questions about it, so we're hoping that it's making a difference.
And I know that you said your research was based on the census data. Did you analyze at all or even see any data that would be useful there about whether women, as opposed to going out into the traditional workforce to get a job, are starting home-based businesses?
Well, let me back up. We're using data collected by the Census Bureau. I just want to clarify for your listeners, census data, it's not decennial census. It's not the form that comes to your house. It's an additional survey of a sample of the population that the census does. It's called current population survey data. And they do have some, this data is collected each month, and different months have different modules. And in March, there's more detailed information, and it might be possible to analyze self-employment or starting a business. I haven't looked at that. You know, we could look by occupation, but when you want to look at husbands who have stopped work in the past year and wives who weren't working before, you get down to really small sample sizes. So it's hard to draw conclusions, you know, if we were just to look at those starting home-based businesses.
And Dr. Mattingly, what does some of this mean for women maybe who don't have the option to start a business? For example, they may not have very much education, or even the job that their spouse may have lost was not, you know, a large chunk of money. They may have already been receiving public assistance, even though the husband was employed. What does this mean for people who might, not have as much education or as many options as we might say, a traditional middle class person might have? And I know that's a loaded term,
right?
Because that's,
well,
yeah.
One of the things we're looking at now, and this doesn't directly answer your question, is looking at what happens to family income when the husband stops work and the woman is working. You know, looking at these changes in employment patterns, because even in middle class families, women often aren't going to make as much as the men were making in their jobs. But we're also seeing, you know, the numbers are showing increases in poverty. You know, people who were barely making it before now are even struggling even more by and large. And I think, you know, there were a lot of things, a lot of provisions, particularly in the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, that sort of gave some longer-term supports to families. But it's a tough time. It's a tough time, especially for those who don't have a lot of resources.
And even that longer-term support, I mean, I don't know the I know of the Act. I haven't read it well enough to know exactly when that longer-term support runs out. But as a researcher and academic, do you think that that does anything to does it sort of give people a chance to sort of relax and go, okay, phew, I'm safe for another couple of years or couple of months? Or do you think it gets people to looking at, you know, okay, well, this is going to run out, so I better go out and make something happen myself?
Well, I definitely think it's the latter, and I think that these supports aren't making people prosperous. They're helping them survive, and most people don't want to live in that living in survival mode is a lot of work. It's really hard. It's really tough. I think anyone would value the opportunity to get out of that mode and into a paying job, into a more stable situation as soon as they could. That's my gut feeling on that.
And I agree. The stress of just, living like that alone, aside from being tired, I just, but I think we see it. I mean, I see it in my neighborhood. I see it at my church. I think all of us are seeing it more so than maybe in past tough, quote-unquote, tough economic times. It seems like it's affecting more people.
Yeah, well, this recession has been longer and deeper and cut across more sectors of the economy than other recent recessions, so...
Are we coming out of it? Do you know if we're coming out of the recession?
Well,
I read a lot about that.
According to the National Bureau of Economic Research, who sort of dates recessions, it's one of the things that they do, the recession officially ended in June of 2009. But if you ask anyone on the street, even myself as a researcher, I'm like, really? Really? Because it still looks, we're still at really high unemployment. We're still having major issues. But the economy is recovering. It's just recovering very slowly.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on how this is impacting children?
Well, the child poverty rates were staggering before, and we've seen significant increases across place, across race over the past 2 years. And so it's, economically in that one measure, I think there are a lot of other effects on children, as families are experiencing stress and children, I think the only thing I've studied is the child poverty rate. I think the other things, it remains to be seen that there could be reasons why, families are banding together differently and experiencing different stressors. I think family stress and economic stress is hard on kids, and it's largely probably depends on how their parents are doing and where they were before the recession.
Yeah, and maybe I would guess even just their frame of mind and how they... what sorts of terms they use to describe the situation.
Right.
I would imagine that has an effect as well. So, I mean, we read studies, and I just commend you and your colleague on creating, something that was not just useful from a policy perspective, and I'm quite sure it's being distributed and enjoyed on Capitol Hill, but just, it's easy to read as well, which was necessary for me because I'm not one of those people who is used to reading studies like this, but the charts are really useful, and so I want to make sure my listeners know that this is available. I do have a copy of it. If anybody wants it, you can just email me at indiebusiness@gmail.com, and I'd be happy to send you a copy of it. So we think about policymakers, we think about lawmakers, and we just had an election, and, a lot of the population is sort of, hem and haw and sort of just like feeling a little bit ambivalent, really, about politics these days. And I know you're not a politician, but I'm wondering just what do you think about us as just women? I mean, how can we, what can we as women maybe do? Besides go out and get a job, which I know is important, but what if we can't find one? Are there other things that we can do? Can we connect with each other in new ways? Do any non-conventional things come to your mind about how we can support each other and get through this?
I think connecting in unconventional ways and also educating ourselves, Think about what's going on. What are the policies being debated? What are some of the issues on the Hill? And write to our senators and write to our representatives and let your voice be heard.
Yeah, and I know that can be stressful in and of itself if you've never done it before. I love seeing you know community groups which I think seem to be growing more popular across the country. They've got things like Meetup where you can go online and find people in your community that are getting together around certain issues, and a lot of them deal with the economy or deal with how to use LinkedIn to get a job and all sorts of things like that I see. Do you think things like that are probably helpful as well, you think?
I don't know. I haven't heard anyone say so, but it's quite possible.
Yeah. Did you look at any particular age groups or ethnic groups, or was it sort of just across the board?
This was pretty much across the board. We controlled for age and ethnicity, but we really were focused on, you know, mm-hmm. the patterns across the nation.
And did you control for children as well? I'm just curious if
yes.
the data showed that it was different for men and women who were married that had children, or as opposed to women and men who didn't have children, or even the number of
yeah.
children, whether that made a difference.
Basically, having a very young child inhibited the likelihood that a woman would get a job if she wasn't working, but having many children increased the likelihood she would get a job.
Wow, I guess you got those built-in babysitters then, if you have.
Well, or you just need to, you know.
Yeah.
Having the more children you have, the more mouths to feed, you just have to work.
Yeah, and that's a tough situation to be in. And so when you think about the 2004-2005 time frame, how was that particular time frame chosen over any other time frames of, quote-unquote, relative prosperity?
Because we chose that because it was the most recent. It was clearly after recovery from the last early recession of the early 2000s, and clearly before, you know, the recession officially began in December of 2007, but people were already feeling it prior to that. So we wanted to go, you know, well prior and well after mm-hmm. the other one ended. So that was how we picked that period. But we wanted it as recent as possible so that other societal level changes and things wouldn't confound our results.
Dr. Madden, did you see any differences in terms of geography, where things were happening? Were they different in different parts of the country?
Not that I recall. I'd have to go back and look. We didn't focus on that.
Okay, because I thought that maybe that might be interesting because, you know, I sort of am interested when I hear reports that, you know, the unemployment rate is extremely high in one state and extremely low in another, and sometimes when I hear those reports, I'm thinking, wow, it seems like to me it would be really different. Now, for example, Oregon, I believe Oregon has got one of the highest. I would think that it would not have one of the highest, and I found
right.
that you know, just kind of interesting and so hard to predict. I mean, so when you take a look at some of the questions that come up here, do you have any thoughts on what women might do once we do get back to, quote-unquote, relative prosperity? Because I'm wondering, I wonder if people will ever feel the sense of, quote-unquote, security the way we've traditionally defined it,
right.
at least in our generation again.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, what women will do, I think there's going to be diversity of responses.
Mm-hmm.
I think some women are going to, you know, may stay attached but less so, or some may keep looking for a job and keep looking for a better job, and some may say, I've had it, I'm going back to the way things were. It just remains to be seen. I think what type of recovery we have and how prolonged it is and what type of jobs their husbands get when they finally go back to work.
Yeah, and certainly, gosh, it's so interesting that you mention that because that's changing too. So I guess for a long period of time, you know, a job was a job, and there were all kinds of different jobs available. But with the advent of technology, it certainly seems more likely that whatever jobs are available will be more in the tech field and less in manufacturing, which has traditionally sustained large pockets of the population for decades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know whether I was expecting you to sort of answer a question, and so I just sort of threw it out there because it just occurred to me that there are so many variables. So I'm just thinking about a study like this and thinking about how I would imagine, you know, even though it's been a short period of time, it's just almost time for another one.
I agree. We have another year of data, so.
Yeah, and I would imagine that, and I've never done studies like this. Are you finding amongst your colleagues that because economies are changing so much more quickly now than they did, let's say, in other generations or even a decade ago, are you finding, the funding and the availability of the resources to conduct these studies more frequently so that, actions can be taken, before there's a need for another study, or is that not a possible thing in your world?
Well, in my world, we're continually writing grants, we're continually seeking funding, and that's a process, and there is funding available, it's competitive, and we keep seeking it.
So, well, the good news there's some good news, and I wanted to point out what I think I'm hearing from this great conversation with you as well as from this study, and that is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm trying to remember what you said about you're finding that women are, it seems like when they look long enough, they actually are finding jobs in this recession. I think you said wives who looked for work during both time frames. But during this time frame, the 2008-2009 time frame, they were actually more likely to take a job.
Yes, but we don't know what that job is. We don't know if it's a job that is met by their skill level or if they are very overqualified for that job. We also don't know if they're taking part-time jobs when really they want full-time. We haven't looked at all those things. We're just looking at, are they taking a job? So I don't know if it's that I don't think it's easier to find a job. I think it's that women are jumping in because they have to as soon as possible.
And probably just hanging in there with the search a little bit longer, or a lot longer.
Exactly. Right. They might keep looking from their job, but...
Right. Not trying to find a job, but trying to find any job.
Right. We didn't look at that, but that's certainly what I suspect may be happening.
Certainly
at least
it's possible. Wow. Well, Dr. Mattingly, I am going to forward this study to any of our listeners and my colleagues who are interested. Can you tell us a little bit more about the research that we do and how we can find out, the research that you do and how we can find out more about what you do and how maybe we can even support your efforts?
Sure. I work at the Carsey Institute at UNH, and you can always go online and subscribe to our listserv and you'll get all our publications, or you can follow us on Facebook. And the research I do is looking at, tends to be nationally based, looking at issues of relevance to vulnerable families, families who are struggling economically, but also to working families, families, balancing work and family. Our group has looked at things like paid leave and, wives earning more than their husbands. We've looked at a nexus of factors, how different childhood poverty experiences affect later life outcomes. We've also done some work showing the importance and the value of the EITC and the Earned Income Tax Credit and the Child Tax Credit for supporting families during this recession. So there's a broad range of work-family issues that we address, and you're certainly welcome to read, and we'd love any feedback anyone has.
And when you say we can follow you on Facebook, is it facebook.com/UNH?
No, it's the Carsey Institute. You'd have to do a search on Facebook, Carsey Institute.
Okay, good. So we'll go to Facebook and look up Carsey Institute, Carsey, to get more information about the exciting and really useful research that Dr. Mary Beth Mattingly and her colleagues are conducting at the University of New Hampshire. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're excited about this information, and we'll be looking for more. And just, everybody, we've got to keep up on what's going on in the world. And, it's easy to sort of get bogged down in your situation, looking at your job situation or your husband's job situation. But really, to make a difference as small business owners, we kind of need to pull out and have a bigger snapshot of what's going on. And studies like this help us do that. They help us write to our congresspersons, as Dr. Mattingly said, so that we can have an influence on what happens where public policy decisions are concerned in this country. Thank you for this study and that reminder, Dr. Mattingly. It was great to meet you, and we'll be looking forward to more from you and your colleagues. Thank you very much.
Thank you
everyone.
Very much.
Thanks for joining. Have a fantastic week. Bye-bye.
Bye.